Hello, I'm Elizabeth, an obsessive backyard gardener who might be able to offer you a couple of tips.
And I'm Keith, a landscape consultant, and I'm also passionate about gardening.
The one thing we both have in common is
muddy boots.
Welcome to another Q&A. We are now 2 weeks into a new year with plenty to do on our gardening calendars, and Muddy Boots is here to help you with any of your gardening questions along the way. Please don't hesitate to contact us, either Keith or me, by DM to Muddy Boots Podcast on either Facebook or Instagram or our other pages. No question is too difficult for my mate Keith, is it?
Want a bit?
Yeah. No, I know. That's definitely, you always have an answer. So let's get started. This week, we will cover a couple of citrus issues, the planting of beetroot and poppy seeds, lily-pilly pests, and moon calendars, amongst other things. Our first question comes from Marilyn. Is there a particular type of mulch that is more nutrient-dense for the garden?
Short answer, not really, because those that do provide lots of nutrients are not long-lasting. And the examples of that would be mushroom compost, and that's full of nutrients, but it dries out and blows away and decomposes very, very quickly. The other two are lucerne and pea straw. Now, both of those are high in nitrogen and nutrients, but neither of those will last very long at all, because the microbes are getting the feed from the nitrogen, and they're converting those into a compost very, very quickly. So, with the only one that will last a fair bit of time will be a product called Who Flung Dung. Now, this is a beautiful compost. It's a beautiful mulch. And it does last a fair bit longer than the other ones that I've already mentioned. But you need to keep on replenishing, because it's so good that the microbes just churn it over into wonderful compost. So I say, with all my designs and everything else, that you've got to put all the nutrients into the soil prior to applying the mulch. So you apply as much organic compost, organic manures, and if you can get access to lignite humate, yes. Which is just absolutely brilliant, then applying that into the soil is going to make that soil just so chock full of goodness and life that then when you put the mulch over the top, you haven't got that problem. It's just a regular feeding after that, yeah. You know, once every now and again. My choice of mulch after applying the organic matter is either using an 8 to 13 millimetre pine bark, which is not going to be pulling the nutrients out of the soil, or better still, if you've put all those goodness things into the soil, then I always go for a granitic sand. And they're available all over Australia, granitic sand. Anywhere there's a quarry, there's going to be a granitic sand available.
Can't wait to put mine down. Very excited. Okay, question number two is from Caroline. I was given some poppy heads that I've dried and saved the seeds from. Can I now plant them straight into the ground, or should I put them into a small pot first and then replant them? The seeds are so small that I'm worried they might just blow away.
If they're going to blow away, they're going to blow into a different spot of the garden and still come up. I was in the backyard, just last week, and went in the where I'm growing potatoes, and I looked down, and sure enough, there is a rosette forming of poppy seed. So once you've got them, you've always got them.
Yeah.
So that is a natural form of self-sowing. So the seed pods produce their flowers, they become pollinated, the seeds dry out, and then they fall over, and those seeds are dispersed all over the ground. And when that happens naturally, there is that many seeds that it doesn't matter if a few of them are going to blow away. So I wouldn't worry about that at all. Yeah. However, if you are concerned, then what I would suggest you do is just fluff up the soil with a rake, throw the seeds down, and then rake it at 90 degrees to what you've just done. Just a light cover over the top of it, and then ensure that the whole thing's kept moist. And what will happen is that those seeds, even in late summer, they will germinate, and they will produce that rosette that they will hold right throughout winter, and then into spring, bang, they would then produce the flowers. So I wouldn't be concerned about it, because the poppy seeds, there are lots and lots of little seeds in those, because there's lots of those seeds used for cakes and all sorts of things to cover the tops of bread and, you know, all that. So there's plenty of seeds. Don't worry about that.
Great. Good luck, Caroline. Your garden's going to look beautiful with poppy seeds, poppy flowers everywhere. We have an interesting question about the moon calendar now. This one's from Helen. I was hoping to get a bit of an idea of how much you garden using the lunar calendar and how closely you abide by it. I try to follow it as it seems such a simple, cost-effective and historic system. But at times I find it silly not to water my plants when it's super hot and the plants look thirsty, but the lunar advice says a definite do not water. Strange. I tend to use my gut feeling, but always feel conflicted.
Well,
I don't know if I've seen do not water on a lunar calendar.
Look, and this is the whole point. There are some moon calendars, particularly the permaculture varieties, that are so complicated that you look at them and you throw up. You say, "Well, this is all just too hard for me. I couldn't be bothered." And that's an unfortunate thing, because if you simplify the whole thing down, then you're going to have success, and you've also got to be mindful about using your own nous. You know, if a plant looks like it's drooping and wanting water, then give it water. Don't listen to the moon calendar, for God's sake. So I always suggest to anyone that asks, what's the best moon calendar to get? Then I always say the one that we always recommend is one that I came across many, many years ago at a gardening expo up in Queensland. Jean and her daughter Sherelle were selling these moon calendars, and once she explained the whole thing to me, everything came and made so much more sense.
Yep.
So there'll be a link to this in our notes, but have a look at www.moongardeningcalendar.com, and all you need to do is write that down on your thingo and touch it, and it'll take you straight to their site. And that makes it so simple.
It is just such a
simple, basic calendar that tells you when to sow your seeds, when to prune, when to harvest, when to fertilize, went to fish even.
If you want
to. So there you go. It is such a ripper. And everyone that I've recommended, they've come back and thanked me
In spades.
In spades,
yes,
absolutely.
It is a very, very simple calendar. I can use it and understand it. Okay, the next question is from Mark. My lime tree looks reasonably healthy and is producing plenty of fruit, but the limes are small and the skin looks almost furry. What's going on?
Right, well, this the furriness is actually a powdery mildew. This is a citrus powdery mildew. And I noticed that from the photographs that you sent in, the leaves are presenting with lots of yellowing. And that is a deficiency in the metal elements in the soil. And when we're talking about metal elements, we're talking of all those metal elements that are, you know, like iron, manganese, boron, all these sorts of things. So The problem is generally due to the soil type or the soil pH. So there could be a problem with the alkalinity of the soil, because a high alkaline soil inhibits the uptake of these important metal elements. So that's where the yellowing can come from. But it could also be a lack of food in the soil. And I noticed there's a photograph of a little bit of mulch around the base of the trunk of the tree, but that mulch doesn't go out to where the drip line of the plant is. It's not around the canopy where the actual plant is. So there's competition for food with the grass as well as the lime tree.
Mm-hmm.
So what I would suggest you do is to increase the mulching around to the drip line, that you get yourself a little simple $17 pH test kit that's going to last you from years from the big green warehouse, and do a simple soil pH test that will tell you what your soil is, whether it's acidic and what the number is, and whether it's alkaline and what the number is. And then reading back off that on the actual test kit, it tells you what to do, how to bring that soil back up, 1 unit or 10 units or 50 units, whatever else. It'll sort that all out. And it's a simple, you know, method. But you've got to understand that lime trees are heavy drinkers and heavy feeders, mm-hmm. so they need lots and lots of tucker.
Okay. Emma has a question about her beetroot seeds. I'm wondering how I will know when beetroot seeds are ready to harvest. I have a few large beetroots which I've let go to seed, and I'm unsure which I can remove, or sorry, when I can remove the seeds from the plant.
Right. So what you're looking for is the actual head, seed heads to start to dry off. And when they start to go a little bit brown, go out there, cut them all off the top of the beetroot up above the ground, and invert them into a brown paper bag. Use a paper bag. The paper bags today that you buy are such thin material anyway, they're still going to allow air and everything else. So put the seed into the paper bag, close the paper bag around it, tie it off, and then hang those and just let those seeds fully dry off and then fall into the bottom of the bag. And then that's all you got to do then is open the bag up and shake them around. You'll hear the sounds of the dry seeds. And beetroot seeds are actually rather large. They're almost like a little bit of tiny piece of cork. They're very, very funny things, you know. So they're not a fine seed like, say, lettuce or carrot, for instance, which are tiny. So very, very easy way of saving your seeds. Very easy.
Fabulous. Good luck with that, Emma. But she also has another question about her lemon tree, another citrus question. We have citrus scale on our lemon tree quite badly. I bought some bugs from Bugs for Bugs to try and help with the problem, but I don't think it helped at all.
No. I bought a whole heap of different bugs from Bugs for Bugs as well, because I knew that it was going to be a very, very interesting season for lots and lots of insects in the garden. So I bought a whole heap of these things, for, you know, lace wings and ladybirds, the works. And I got to say, I wasn't very impressed. We didn't have a lot of success with it at all.
So they're supposed to tell us how they work.
Well, you actually buy the little bugs, and they're in a little packet, and they're not live bugs.
Yeah.
All right. They're little cells, but they're at the stage that in their cycle, it's the cycle that they're about to become that is the predatory insect. So, you know, for instance, lace wings, that's the stage that they will open. They'll become lace wings themselves. They can go and feed on the aphids, or they'll become ladybugs and take off that way. So you buy them like that, and it's, look...
It sounds really clever.
It sounds very, very clever, but I have not had any success with it.
Okay.
I found that the predatory insects are coming into the garden naturally anyway because of, you know, of all the other things that are happening within the garden. You know, I've got lots of plants that provide nectar for those predatory insects. The only thing that worked effectively was their yellow sticky trap, which is actually used. You use that to determine what insects are around at that stage.
So
but then you've got to know what that insect is for a start to determine what the solution is. So you
sounds a bit complicated.
There's something missing in translation. So, and I've had the same, you know, results from lots of other people's.
Okay.
So citrus scale is not citrus scale. The scale on it is just scale. It can affect any plant, indoor plants, outdoor plants, whatever. Anything that's got good sap in it, you can get scale in it. So it's just a little insect that's got, it's almost like a little brown oval-shaped thing, and it sticks itself to the leaves of the plants, either on the top or underneath, and it sucks through those leaves the sugars that are created by photosynthesis. So sucrose and fructose, that is its food. And it gets so much of that food that it exudes that syrupy sugars through the back of them, of their bodies. And then that attracts another problem. Then you've got ants coming up to harvest the sugars. So they stand on top of the actual scale. And then they've got sugary sap on their feet that they then transpose down the trunk of the tree, and that causes a third problem. And that third problem is sooty mold. Mm. You get this black sooty mold that is just feeding off the sugars on the trunks. Mm. So you get a really, really horrible looking, you know, tree.
Diseased.
So you've got three problems. So the thing that you should do is get yourself some eco oil or a white oil, I prefer Eco Oil because you can use it both in summer and winter. It's a very, very effective control. And you simply mix up a spray unit. So if you've got a 5-litre sprayer, you put 25 mil of Eco Oil into it, fill it up to the 5-litre mark, pressurise that, and then spray over all the whole plant underneath the leaves and over the top. And that oil will then cover the back of the insect. It can't breathe, so it kills them. And then when the insect is no longer producing sugars, the ants have got nothing to get. And when the ants aren't transposing the sugars down the trunks, the sooty mold's got nothing to live off, so you've eliminated all the problems. And then give your citrus tree a lovely big feed of Gigantic or one of these other beautiful organic citrus fertilizers, not a chemical form.
No, God, no.
Organic.
And so feeding them on a regular basis should be preventing, the tree will be healthy and
absolutely
should prevent any of these insect or these diseases
coming up
at
and
all.
Once again, if you can get hold of some Monash rock dust, give them a dose of Monash. Just throw the rock dust over the top of the whole plant and it will just give it a wonderful feed of different polarities, as well as all the trace elements and minerals that those plants probably aren't getting at the moment. It'll just make them more resistant to pest disease.
Fabulous. Good luck, Emma. Got some work to do. Now for one from JC. I think we may have actually had this question from another listener a lot long ago, if I remember rightly. Why are there bumps on my lily pilly leaves?
Oh, goodness gracious.
We have had that recently.
We have had that one, yeah. Look,
common.
The little bumps are caused by a psyllid, and it is spelt P-Y-S-L-L-I-D.
No, P-S-Y-L-L-I-D.
Yeah, that's it.
Anyway, sorry,
Keith. I just got it wrong. And these are little sap-sucking insects, sometimes called plant lice. And they can congregate on the underside of the leaves as adults. They mate, and the female then inserts eggs into the margins of the leaves. These eggs then hatch into small nymphs where they feed and develop in and produce a pimple or a cup-shaped gall. So what you need to do is feed the trees with a native food, so something like bush tucker would be very, very good for them, and then start a regular application on a weekly basis of spraying Eco Oil and Eco Neem.
Combined, yes.
So 25 in the 5-litre container, 25 mil of Eco Oil.
And 12?
12 to 13 mils of Eco Neem. So even you're getting that. Well done.
Yeah.
And then you've just got to keep on spraying the plant. And you spray that underneath and over the leaves.
To run off. So that really it's running off.
All till to running off.
Yep.
And this will also kill another little bug that affects the lily pillies, and it is the leaf beetle. And it is a tiny little green beetle, about the size of a cotton bud, maybe a little bit bigger than a cotton bud. And it's green, so you can hardly see him. The way that I find them is I find where there's lots of new chewing being going, and just pull your hands through it and then look in your hands and you'll find that you've got these little green bugs. So if you spray them on a regular basis, that will, with the Eco Oil and Eco Neem, it'll become systemic and it will kill those little mongrels. I had a neighbour up in the laneway, not far from where we were. She had a whole row of these lily pillies, and she said to me, "What can I do?" And I told her, "This is what you've got to do, and you ought to see those trees now. They look absolutely superb."
So when you say spray on a weekly basis, how long?
Probably for 4 to 6 weeks.
Okay.
Because and you've got to do it if you get any rain. You've got to do a follow-up.
Yeah.
Because the Eco Neem will be absorbed by the leaves to become systemic, so that anything that chews and sucks will just kill them.
Fantastic. Great advice. Good luck, JC. Our last question today is from Ellie, who lives in Canterbury in New Zealand. It's about the moon calendar again, too.
Oh.
I'm trying to source a moon calendar, and I'm wondering if you can tell me where I can purchase one that will ship to New Zealand. The one that Keith has would be ideal, so I can turn it like a wheel, pretty much as it turns, to suit the phases here in New Zealand.
Exactly. And your phases are going to be exactly the same as our phases. You're only two hours away from us, in terms of time here on the eastern coast of Australia. So that'll work perfectly over there for you. So it's the best calendar there is because it's perpetual. That means it's going to last for as long as you treat it nicely, and they have a plastic sleeve that's over them, so they're protected from moisture and so forth. All you need to do is click on the link, which is www.moongardencalendar.com, and away you go, and it'll take you straight to the site. The postage is, I don't know what the postage in New Zealand's going to be, but the calendars are only about $15, I think, from memory. Mm. Nice and cheap, and you've got it there forever, and you will enjoy your garden so much more by following the moon calendar's phases properly.
Kind of makes gardening easier because you don't need to be thinking quite as much about what do I do when.
Exactly.
It tells you what to do when.
You know, and that's so important in my garden because I have got that many hedges in my garden that if I was cutting those hedges during the high growth period, I'd be cutting them the week after, whereas I cut it when it tells me to cut it, which is in the low growth period, and then bang, and I've got some reprieve from cutting hedges.
Fabulous. Okay, that is it for this Q&A session. But before we go, we have that prize-winning bit to do.
Yep.
This week, our prize goes to Emma, who is busy, very busy, poor girl, dealing with citrus scale and nurturing her beetroot seeds. We will be in contact with you soon, Emma. You are going to love your special package from our friends at The Plant Runner. So for everyone else, please be sure to visit theplantrunner.com and keep sending your questions so that we can make you a prize winner as well. Thank you for listening to Muddy Boots. For more information on today's podcast, please go to muddyboots.net.au, and happy gardening.